This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi everyone, Alex here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons.
HP Starcraft, Bailey Anderson, Bob Wallace, Anne, Jane Belinskaya, Alexander Vane, Ben Bloomquist, Liam McLaughlin, Nathan Lake Star, Brenna DeLune.
Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
Hello and welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
Ben Meredith. No, wait.
Wait.
That's
wait.
Just the name that comes first.
Sorry, I know.
He's not here right now. That's really confusing.
All change is bad.
I'm struggling. Can I just pretend to be him?
You know what?
We've got such similar voices.
I'm sure that'll be fine and won't make me, like, jump off something high all quickly.
Right. Bryn Monroe.
Bryn Monroe, okay.
Ben Meredith.
No!
I'm Ben Meredith.
I'm Ben Meredith.
No one's Ben Meredith.
Ben is gone.
Yes.
We ate him.
As in, like, he got to get train. Yeah. I'm Lydia Nicholas.
There we go.
And I'm Helen Gould, and I'm not messing about.
So you've... Zing! So you may have noticed that I'm playing this a little bit calmer than normal, and that's because we're doing a long overdue metacast. We haven't done these in ages, and we're just going to do another one.
We didn't do one since the last season break.
Yeah, I know.
And this is the longest season as well. Was like 40-something episodes.
It's really hard planning an episode, like, length when you don't know what your players are doing. Actually, that's quite relevant to what we're about to be discussing. So we are actually covering today long-term play. So a lot of the stuff we covered initially was like, you know, this is how you play the game, these are the sort of how the classes play out, and some of the stuff has been event-based, like how do you deal with a character dying or a new player entering and so on. But we haven't really done much about long-term play, so things where it's like, how do you sustain a character over a real long arc?
I mean, we've been playing this campaign 4 years.
Yeah, which,
like, some
is
of my
thing.
Friends weren't born then. Like, and I mean that literally. Like, there are babies born since then.
James's child.
Well done for preempting where I was going. That who's now old enough that we have in jokes, right? That's how long it's been.
It's distressing to me that when I set up the podcast right at the beginning, I actually tried to have a conversation and I had to explain to a bunch of people like what RPGs were and stuff, because times they changed. Actual play was a niche that basically no one was a lot of things happened. But anyway, so we're going to be discussing that. And then in the second half, we're also going to be discussing a bunch of stuff to do with what shape of things are going to look like going forward, because when you hit those high levels, things change, and you got all this character baggage that you're lugging around that you got to deal with as well. I'll discuss some things about how to run stuff, but also, like, as players, things to watch out for and
just
things like that.
Bags of holding, but for emotion.
Bags of holding, best thing I ever introduced.
Yeah,
that's what therapy is. The therapist is a bag of holding.
How is there not an item called emotional baggage? How is that not a thing?
No, that should be like an effect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, to inflict on someone.
Surely it should be a familiar. It's just,
follow
it's just
you around.
A suitcase that has moods.
the luggage from Terry Pratchett.
Nice.
Its only mood is homicidal rage.
So, going into, like, I'm going to open the floor for this one instead of just going through my normal bullet point lists. So, you've all played characters for a long time now, including, like, you, Helen. People still sort of think of you as, like, the fresh new, like, you're the new toy for everyone. You've been playing with us for, like, what, a year and a bit? Yeah. Something like that?
A whole year? My word!
I started
in autumn, like September or October, I think.
So I think it's been a year and a few months. Coming on to a year and a half.
Give or take.
So you've all done the long-term play thing.
I still think of myself as fresh and new.
Question time for all of you, then. Having done the long-term play thing, I'm going to go around the table, not necessarily in order. What do you think has been the hardest thing that comes with playing long-term from your perspective? So, as an example, it could be something like, I know what Ben's would be right here. Stop picking characters whose voices hurt. Or accents you can't maintain. It's terrible. Don't do that. Like, I have had this talk with Ben before, and he's like, yeah, I keep doing that. I wish I wouldn't. So for the rest of you, though, like, you run a game longer than most people really get the chance to. That's something to bear in mind as well. Like, I haven't heard of many groups that manage to sustain games for this long. So is there anything that has sort of caught you as it's been going on where it's like, I underestimated that as a problem, or this is something where it wasn't an issue, but as it's gone on, it has become one?
Having to adapt my idea of the character to what was actually happening in the game, because I had much grander ideas of, like, who Azu was, and then she kept rolling badly at stuff, and I was like, okay, so I guess she's really awkward.
It's only consolation. You just kind of deviated to the norm for all of us. We're just an awkward bunch, but yeah, I see what you mean with that one.
Because, like, I had to be...
Azu's the most awkward, though.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
But Azu came in so, like, austere at first. It's all like, hello.
Yeah.
This is me. And then it was like, also, this is Fairhands. How cool is this?
Yeah, because, like, my idea was... She was very dedicated. And I thought of her quite seriously.
Yeah.
And I thought of Fairhands as being, like, an actual kind of, like, maybe a rival in terms of, like, she was going to prove herself. But, like, it turned into fan worship. And then on, I was like, right, she can't be serious. She is not a very serious person. And then she actually did have to get serious because loads of horrible things kept happening, and now, right now, I'm thinking, how am I gonna have her deal with all the horrible things that have happened.
Seriousness, it doesn't come to you. You're not born with seriousness.
No.
It's thrust upon you in the fiery forge of play. But I do see what you mean with that. I mean, you actually have lent in immediately into something that's really important if you're going to play a long-term character. And if you know you're going to play, like, obviously sometimes you start playing something and you assume it'll fail and things keep going or whatever, but a lot of it is a character isn't a static thing.
Yeah.
And in short-term play, bizarrely, all of the tricks that you use to really hit the ground running, it's like, I have a strong idea of who this character is. Great, let's go. You play four sessions. Fantastic, let's leave. The person who's playing super loose and reactive in a short-term play tends to come across as a little bit like, don't really know where to go with the character. Whereas when you're doing real long-term play, it's got to be reactive. It's more about building a bunch of components so that you can guess how this person would react rather than being like, Azu is a serious person from the go. Everything I do must reinforce that Azu is serious. Like, you've got to react to a degree.
And yet, I really admire the way that Ben plays with Grizzop because...
Fascistically.
Huh?
That's a word, right?
Stochastically, do you mean?
I was good. You know what? Sure, it's all good. I said fascistically.
Oh, fascistically. Sorry, I thought you said schistically, and I was like, oh, that's... I've made that pronunciation mistake. But
he's got a really, really strong idea of who Grizzop is as a person, and he sticks to it no matter what. And, like, I know that there are times where I have not been able to do that,
I mean,
I think.
From a GM's perspective, that does carry a downside as well, which is, like, I know Ben, and I know how Ben plays, which is Ben stands at the top of Pride Rock, he casts his eye around, and then he points out and he goes, there! That is the hill I shall plant my flag, and that is the hill I shall die on, no matter what happens, and no matter where the campaign goes.
I like it when we talk about our friends that can't defend themselves.
It's great.
It's well, the easiest way.
I think you're right, because I've spoken to
other
people.
Isn't his moustache silly?
Whoa!
Let's not go there, because remember that time that he shaved it off, and we were all like,
oh, it was wrong.
I only say that because obviously the moustache works.
Ben without facial hair was wrong.
Oh, yeah, really wrong.
You're just saying that because it made him more easily confused with you.
No. It was wrong. Half of his face was missing, but then he grew it back, so it's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay.
But yeah, like I've talked to other people who have GM'd Ben, and they've said the same thing.
It's how he rolls.
He will pick on something and stick to it. Like
it's a style of play, but it's not that he ignores the campaign that's going on. So a good example is we always discussed when Grizzop was coming in that he was sort of something that I call like an accelerant character. So it's like someone whose build deliberately encourages movement. So Bertie filled that role. For all of his horrendousness, he was openly like, what's your thing? I get bored easily.
Yeah.
I get bored easily. I am goal-oriented. It doesn't matter, but you need at least one person in the party who's like, we have to keep doing things.
Yeah. Several times we actually could feel with Bertie, I remember, like, I felt safe getting stuck into the details of things because that felt like a right choice for Sasha because I knew that James would interrupt me, and which he did a couple of times, like, bored now! And that was the right pacing. And that's the thing of having done, like, the improv for so many years with, like, James, that from... the beginning, I could be like, oh, my character at this point is playing this game with the awareness that this other game is going to be played.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, and so it's cool to then see that structure like continue in lots of different people
but
and ways.
That reaction as well is about players interacting with one another. So another thing to bear in mind with Azu is, regardless of where you came in and what you hoped for the character, I don't think it's like played out badly or anything. But
no, definitely
you,
not. I love
you were almost physically forced into becoming the heart of the group.
Oh my gosh!
Because Hamid's sort of, despite everything that's happened, still sort of rocking almost the coming of age narrative. Obviously, we know what Sasha's deal is, and we know Grizzop hasn't really.
Grizzop is the legs of the group.
Grizzop, that's the best way to describe it. So the thing is that there are sort of character holes in a group. A lot of people are like, oh, you need to do DPS support or whatever. And like, yeah, fair. Mm. But also, you will gravitate to the hole that's in a group, and the group, even if they're not aware of it, will create that hole for you. So it's like, whether you want it to or not, you turn into hugging a lot quick. And it was because everything had been miserable, and there was an opening for someone lovely.
Yeah.
If you'd have tried to play super hardcore badass, I think there'd have been a lot of friction because it wasn't the space, like you would be trying to put a triangle into a square hole, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also, I have two modes when I'm playing. I think I've said this before. And one is like super angry, badass person. Yeah. And one is very lovely and optimistic person.
I think Azu has a bit of both.
She can be a badass. And that's the joy of playing those two modes. You can sit into them at will.
But then you jump into like the stuff that's happened in Rome and so on, where you get things that I like to think of as like pivot points, which is where the game has changed. So, for instance, it could be that the group now doesn't need a heart. Let's say, I don't know, hypothetically, since...
We just need fire, air, earth and water.
Honestly, like...
It's not going to summon Captain Planet, Alex! We still need a heart!
Captain Planet's already basically a robot by this point. Like, no, a lot of it is, though, that reactive thing. Is you could still now lose that part of you and become something else, and it would still work.
I agree, because I have a real thing for people getting broken, I guess.
It's not too late to get Sharpie and write angst on your big pink axe.
Next to no shouting, yeah. Only whispering from now on.
Only angry whispering.
So how about other players? Things that you've noticed come up over long-term play, either that you were expecting or weren't, that are the kind of thing that you would never run into in a short term?
Well, I, at the very beginning, had like an arc idea for Sasha, but it was a very flexible one, right? So I thought, this person's risk is Batman, right? We talked about this quite a lot. Like, her issue is, can she trust people and build those relationships enough to not turn into angry vengeance of the night? And it's sort of interesting seeing how that has played out. I get a bit of a... I mean, we could talk about... This could lead into a discussion of character fatigue, I suppose.
Oh, no, that's absolutely, like, relevant.
So my thing is, I hadn't played much role-playing games before this. And so I deliberately picked a character who was very much like me. I made very few character choices. Basically, I think Sasha is me if I'd got into sword fighting rather than theatre as a teenager. Pretty... Everyone here is
checks
sort
out.
Of... Yeah, everyone here is sort of...
I don't know. I think there are more layers to you than that.
There's a lot of layers to Sasha, but it's...
Oh, what if we took Lydia's best friend and put her brain in a jar?
Oh, okay, yeah, that
yeah,
was
right. Yeah. The algorithm is complete. But because I knew it would be hard to do one thing for years, basically, I've done a lot of improv, if not role-playing games, and I know about the sort of choices that you can sustain and the sort of ones that work for punchy short things, and I thought, well, this is a character where I've set up these like big, long-term emotional arcs and story hooks, and I feel like quite a lot of hers got complete. Like, I almost felt like that moment where she forgave Barrett was like...
That was really powerful.
I'm sort of...
Did feel like a big, big sense of closure.
Yeah, like, and now there's a lot more to do. And this is the irritating thing for anyone out there who is dealing with trauma. There's a lot of things where you're like, oh, I've had this massive moment of closure. Oh, and then I've got to keep on living. And, like, live with the knowledge of these scars, but, like, not in a, oh, I'm in a crisis kind of way. You've just got to keep living.
You're right to home in on the Barrett thing, because that was deliberately built by me to be a pivot point, which is, there were two ways that could realistically go. Is one, Sasha completely shifts gear in some way.
Yeah.
As to what that is, I don't know. Kill happy, completely lovely. It didn't really matter, but that option was there. Or the other option is, you sort of stay the same gradually, but when you're hitting a pivot point and you stay the same, I tend to notice that's when that fatigue can start to come in, because if you don't gear shift, you do end up sort of running to the logical conclusion of that sort of character's arc to a degree. Yeah. So like Hamid's a good example of one where
he's had
big ones, but his have been reactive still. So like sister death led to him actually getting more serious and less faffy. But that is a pivot point that was again engineered for Hamid. And I think if he'd have stayed the same, he'd have been the same as like, I'm running out of places to go with this character. And every character has to face those pivot points, but it's pretty much a binary choice between you know, adopt, adapt, improve, you know, change or die. Mm. And I don't mean that in the sense of like, if you just stick with it, your character is doomed. It's just that I tend to see people run into that, struggling to keep a character going when they don't leap on that pivot as a
like there were lots of big changes, but it was like a gradual learning to trust with lots of knockbacks, which is why it was almost more of a big thing for her when the Squizzard turned up than like in Cairo, because that was a like, oh, I thought I was doing quite well, and she was really happy, and then it's like that was the massive blow, and then it's that sort of like, oh, I've accepted and I've forgiven that, but this is the thing that I felt real for the character, that she might have had that big revelation and that understanding, but she's still a mess. Mm. Yeah. And she's got a lot of processing to do, which is why when like someone wants to take away her dagger and like change plans and make her do things that are like not according to her instincts, she's got a lot of anger. Mm. And I was, I think that it's interesting as well that so many people she cares about died off or left. And so, I think that I just want her to have time to have a sit down and a coffee, you know? Like, it's a bit of a thing where I was like, I'm glad that we've got Grizzop in there forcing things onward for, like, the good of the party. But there's been a couple of times she's tried to have a conversation. And he's been like, no, we've got to go! She's like, I just want to cry!
No time. Try on the way.
You chose definitely the wrong party member for that. Either me or Hamid.
Yeah, but
been so much better.
But the problem there is that like both of them are too
touchy feely.
Yeah. Right. Like that's the thing.
You need cold, emotionless discussion about emotions.
Exactly.
I get it.
Right. Yeah.
You need a chatbot that's been taught what anger is.
Exactly.
And I gave you one, and all you did is turn it off.
Yeah. It's too... Well, she had a lot of really heart-wrenching conversations with it.
Yeah.
She did.
I'm not even joking. Yeah. Like, Brock was built as a pivot point, and all those conversations were like, cool, adapt or change, adapt or die. And then it was like, cool, Sasha starts making new friends and trusting more people and stuff.
Yeah, she said she felt that, oh, I had been loved and was cherished, and so can be. And I just think she needs to have a bit of a sit-down and a hug. I hope that she makes some friends that are slightly less busy at some point.
But it is a thing to be aware of then on the GMing side is a lot of people will say, and they're wrong to, you know, character is on the player side, the world is on the GM side. As a GM, you absolutely have to provide those pivot points. Mm-hmm. If you do not provide you can get lucky. So some things will turn into that, even if you were just laying out the world and the world panned out that way. Great. But if you do not also engineer some, you're basically trusting whether people get bored of the character and walk away and whether that character becomes unplayable to chance. Mm-hmm. Whereas you kind of have to be like, cool, every so often, I don't have like a set number of episodes, but I kind of do it by feel, but every single one of you has to get a certain number of pivot points every so often. And I stagger them so that that way it isn't just the Sasha show for like a season.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can tell when it's been too long since one of you has had a pivot point because your character can get bland. Mm. And I don't mean like performance-wise, but I mean like not enough has happened, so you're just sort of ticking along a little bit. Bertie got a little bit that way towards the end, like after the Zol stuff, which was his final pivot point.
And one of James's rules for the character was he can't grow and he can't learn because he's a horrible person and I want him to stay a horrible person.
But that put an expiration date on the character.
Yeah. That's such a tough constraint.
I think he ran about as long as I've ever had a character like that last. Mm. And even then, that came at the expense of Zolf sort of leaving. Yeah. But that's a good example of one where, like, he expressly said, no, what was it? No hugs, no... I forget what it was. But
redemption, probably.
The no change rule is... It's a thing, and it's not that it's a bad character choice. It's just it forces change on everyone else.
Yeah.
So every single time your characters are presented with a pivot choice that they reject, you're actually pushing the onus onto everyone else to change around you, which can work. Like, I have seen it happen where one person plays that character and everyone likes them so much that everyone else picks up that slack, but you are warping their play around you.
Yeah.
Most often I actually see it in the rogue thing, or I'm a lone wolf.
Yeah.
And that can work, but more often than not, it puts the onus on other people, and eventually people are like, eh. It's not that it's a wrong choice, it's just it's a more difficult choice to pull off long term.
You have to remember that since Barrett turned up has been, what, 4 or 5 days?
That's the other thing about game time.
It's this bizarre thing of, like, we just dash around too much to sometimes have those kind of reflections and conversations. And that's fine, because particularly as this being a podcast means that stuff needs to happen. But they're all the kind of fluff moments are either implied or, like, so rare and precious. Like, so it's not that I think the pacing's...
So that's actually one of the things I've found most difficult about the long-term nature of the game. The thing I feel has been lacking is the in-depth development of the specific relationships between the characters and the party. Like, Sasha started off so closed, and there's, like, her and Hamid, like, they're the two who've been around the longest. I would have loved to have seen more moments of them learning to know each other, to support each other, which was really difficult because they're so different.
Yeah.
And actually, I've read a couple of pieces of really amazing fanfic about moments between them, and I'm like, oh, I wish that had happened for real.
Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't read the fanfics, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and, from Hamid's perspective, like, it wasn't really going to happen with Bertie. As soon as the exposition box happened and he revealed he was only along because he had to be, Hamid was actually quite hurt by that.
Oh yeah, Hamid checked out emotionally.
Yeah. And like, it was happening with Zolf, and like, and that's the reason it became the primary ship in the fandom.
Because it's the only possible people. They have one conversation. Alex allowed them one slow chat.
Yeah.
And from that, I'm
very much not. I don't ship the two of them, but I can see why people did, because they were starting to break down those emotional barriers between the two of them. And I was really enjoying that. And then Zolf had to leave because of the party dynamics. And I don't think Grizzop and Hamid, like, ever since that whole bit in Cairo, like, that's not going to happen.
Never resolved that.
I honestly don't think Hamid is ever going to be able to fully trust Grizzop on an emotional level. Absolutely trust him on every other level without question, but he'd never be able to open up to him. And maybe that will happen for Hamid and Azu, especially now where we are at the beginning of season four. But I'd be surprised if we have time for it.
But this is your pivot point. This is the first one where I've synced up a pivot point for all of the party simultaneously.
And I kind of hope it does, to be honest. And I think it could.
Back in Cairo, I was thinking, I think Hamid and Azu could be, like, best buds.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's one thing I missed. Now, you know, I've played in other long-term campaigns, and I have found in the past, playing a character for this long, you do get tired of them, like, playing the same. But one of the things I absolutely built in from the start for Hamid was the potential and the hard-to-avoid potential for growth and for change, both mechanically and emotionally, and I've absolutely loved it. I love playing Hamid. The hardest thing for me about the long-term nature of having to play Hamid is I'm so scared he's going to die. Just so scared, Alex.
Oh, right.
In 118, I was like, no! My precious boy!
But you have also, all of you, homed in on my secret shame that I don't like to talk about a lot, but I will here, which is, everyone has the thing that they're not good at in terms of sort of like making a campaign and so on. And I have one real problem, which is I think if I could travel back in time and redo all of this differently, I would change the tempo of this show. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because, honestly, I'm 4 years better on as a GM than I was then.
Yeah, like, you've done this so much. You've got so much experience.
The thing is, as well, is originally I hadn't done the podcast thing as well. Like, this is the first ever podcast I ever ran. And gee, God. Yeah. This started with a show and now I run a network. That's the thing. But part of that was, you know, trying to figure out what it is that an audience wanted. And I underestimated when I started this just how much people need that downtime and like length of term growth. So the issue is, I use the rules of TV, which is you use a ticking clock to make sure that things keep happening and that characters keep moving. But RPGs aren't the same. They're just not. And I think that's my biggest failing is even now, because I've gotten in habits and the shape of the campaign and blah, 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 because the camp came from ground one, was always built to have a ticking clock, is that if I was running this with friends and not just as a recorded thing, but as like a just social thing where I can afford to spend 3 hours, like, are any of you guys feeling combat today? No. Great. Let's just chill. I would have had a lot more downtime and all of this would have probably paid out over the course of about 10 years for the characters. That's not an exaggeration. I would have had like...
Or at least more than 2 months.
I'd have had like, you complete an arc. It's like, cool, reconvene in 6 months. Great. And I'd have done that. But yeah, unfortunately, it's sort of been baked in from the start. But that's the biggest shift.
It works, and it means that we've been able to get through a lot and gone to lots of different locations and encountered.
Really cool.
And there's been different pacings to different bits.
Yeah.
And like the whole, like, the emotional stakes are really high. It's just that a lot has to be conveyed sometimes in a couple of words. Mm. And yeah, it's a bit like, I think that Sasha is probably the closest to opening up to Wilde.
Yeah.
She's like, they've
the puns
had,
with the routine.
They've like had their breakfast together. Like,
fair point, actually.
Whole,
yeah.
Yeah, like she made him some food and tried to have jokes.
And both of you get the long term illness that no one else really seems to wrap their head around.
Right.
A bit.
They're both trying to like share and understanding what it's like to have a chronic like wasting disorder. Like, so just have it chilling and understanding. But, yeah, I think of all the characters that she might. If something were to happen to her, or that she, like, one of the characters that she'd miss the most would be Wilde, probably.
And Hammy got the chance to be emotionally open with his sister.
Yeah,
that was a huge scene, and again, the fans reacted to it. And I felt the same. Like, that was such an important moment for him to just be like, "This is what I'm going through right now."
Yeah,
because he's a very emotional little guy.
He is. He's got a big heart, or
big
tiny
heart.
But there's not much else, but it's just a big. Just
that's why it keeps coming
heart.
Out of his sleeve.
Yeah, I think you're being a little bit hard on yourself because, like, you've got to remember, like, all the time constraints that you've been under because you're like, okay, this has to be 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then something has to be 25 minutes. And then we've got to do that, like, four times.
A little bit.
That's such an incredibly difficult thing. And you do an amazing job at it.
Well, you know, with everyone telling me how wonderful I am, why don't we take a break there and then we'll come back and start discussing,
Alex,
like,
you're so great.
How long
so
term
lovely.
Things can
would
be.
You like a chip?
Oh, yeah, I would. You know what? I'm wonderful.
Let's have some chips. Ooh,
nom nom, delicious pride chips.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
And welcome back. Oh, it's... I don't have to be like, great, okay, where were we? What's happening? Roll another.
We were wrong. We were talking about emotions.
Emotions.
And length. You're actually all right, Alex. It's fine.
Roll a quality dice. Roll a quality dice.
We've got three quality.
Middling quality.
That's a two.
Oh, no.
I can't do maths.
Now we've got to re-record the re-intro.
Just cut.
We have been discussing some of the difficulties that can come with playing character over the long term. But I'm now going to open this a bit further to looking forward.
Can we talk about the positives of doing it long term as well?
So that's one of the things I want to tie it to is looking...
It's been amazing for me. I already said this a bit, but playing Hamid as a person who could change and grow and getting to play through that. And he has changed so much since the beginning. Not necessarily how I thought you would, but similar to how I thought you would. It's been great.
When you talk about it, it's like you're talking about your child.
I think Sasha's changed an enormous amount. Yeah. I very much agree with the fact that the film starts off with the introvert who has to go off and save the world by working with other people. When they go back, they're still an introvert because that is not a bad thing to be.
Yeah.
Like, that's the... Sasha learned that she can open up to some people and that sometimes you get hurt. But, like, that doesn't mean that... Yeah,
so but there will always be gargoyles to help you through those problems.
Exactly.
That's the true moral, yeah.
And she's got her coping strategies. She's got very healthy coping strategies, including throwing her knives lots and saying hello to people in high places. Like, that's fine. But yeah, it's been a joy, a lot of it. It's been great fun. And it's great fun to, like, you can fall back on the awkwardness sometimes and just be like, but what is that?
Hi, other people in the podcast. You deal with this topic.
Yeah. I fade into the background like a really well camouflaged owl.
Follow it through. Stick with it.
Oily night.
So, out of curiosity, then, in the long term, like looking forwards, things then. What things are you now that you've been running your characters a long time? Mm-hmm. What is it that you're looking forward as things in the campaign or things going forwards that now that you've navigated doing long term already and you still have long term ahead of you, like what change are you going to implement or what are you looking forward to as the most positive thing then?
I'm going to be a bloody dragon.
Yeah. I mean, that's
the end goal.
That's like a mechanical thing. Like, you know, I obviously enjoy the numbers side of RPGs. I think that's been obvious from day one. But yeah, so I've always had this hook there mechanically for Hamid that I've enjoyed playing through, and getting more dragony has been amazing. And yeah, I want to be a big dragon. But I mean,
don't we all though?
Oh yeah, it's a universal story, isn't it? Really, the quest to become a dragon,
the coming of age into being a dragon.
Yeah. So Hamid's learned to cope with everything, you know, and you know he's grown into. I mean, to at least to some degree, the leadership of the party in that sense, like, you know, he definitely would not have been, he would have been terrible at it. And, you know, like, I feel like in Rome, especially, like, you know, like responding to the people who took the hostages with, no, go away, we're not doing what you tell us, was a big moment for him.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things, one of his major flaws that I built into him at the start, he's always been easily led by other charismatic people.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And it's like, the reason he has this kind of backstory of being a dickhead is because he'd surrounded himself with dickheads and he wanted to be like them. And it so much of the party, you know, Zolf mostly at first was about learning to be a better person, and then the Paladins come along and, you know, that's continued. And you know, and then in Rome when he were like right, here's a plan to assault the compound, like, and didn't go to plan at all, but the fact that, you know, he was kind of comfortable being like, well, Sasha, you're really good at this bit, why don't you do this bit, the three of us can do this bit. And like managing Ed and stuff like that.
Difficult.
Yeah, like it's that difficult. Kind of stuff. I've really enjoyed playing, and I think that
I'm allowed to lie.
I loved it. I just like. How can I reconcile what I need right now with this character? I was like, yeah, do it.
Genius.
The thing is, like, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So, for me, I'd love to see Hamid now that he's grown into that position, to learn to deal with his own power and privilege. Like, he is canonically becoming a very powerful person within this world, simply in terms of his ability to cast spells, but also the fact that he's going to inherit financial power from his family and social power from his family, and he could turn into a dragon and inherit. Like, I'd love to see him deal with that and learn to acknowledge his power, and therefore learn to use it more. Like, you know, I'm.
Well, it's just what they always say, you know, with great power comes great chance of spell failure.
Yeah, it's true. Sorry, I'd love to see him have that kind of moment. It's like, right, I have so much power, I have to learn to use it in a helpful way. And I'm a massive lefty and a liberal, and therefore, for me, I'd love to see that. And I think it's always been a risk with Hammond that he turns into another Bertie, and he's never going to be as obviously terrible a person as Bertie
that
is,
because
he's just
worse.
Smarter. Mm. But he could be, like, you know, he could be awful if he just learnt to abuse his power.
Yeah.
And I think he's only really realised he's got power quite recently. Mm. So I think that, emotionally, I think that's the final thing that Hamid has to learn and process is, oh my god, I'm really powerful. Can I be sensible about that? Do I acknowledge it and use it respectfully and helpfully, or do I buy into it and get drunk on it and
you
abuse
are tempting
it?
Me with the most amazing non-canonical side quest ever. The Red Sun version of Hamid, where he gets placed in all of the worst people. What does Hamid look like in that world?
That would be amazing.
That would be really interesting. I'm not even joking. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Patreon. In fact, awesome. in the timeline that has been created from Sasha and Grizzop going back, there's a whole load of different things about where Apophis's kiddie.
Oh, you know
maybe.
What? I'm just allowed multiverse now.
Yeah,
great.
Let's
job
it.
Done.
Let's do it.
The thing is, I want to hear more about Azu's backstory, but because we don't know it in, I almost feel like learning more about Azu here. I don't want to spoil any of the because I want to know more about what happened with Azu.
So what's interesting for me with Azu is that she, unlike most of the characters so far, like she's actually like. She started out quite well adjusted.
True.
Like she had a pretty happy family life.
You did meet a bunch of people and declare that they're all your wives.
Yes, but that's a good thing.
Oh, is it? The mistake isn't that you're overly familiar, it's that I am not familiar enough, of course.
Yes. So she's like really community and family focused.
Yeah.
So her automatic. Do you know? What are they called? There are these huge rodents. In some island.
Capybaras?
Yeah, the ones that are friends with everything?
Yeah
that's capybaras. Azu. Like, she's just like a person capybara.
Tigers.
Capybaras are the ones that are super chill and people and things chill on top of them.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
You know, buddies.
So, like, she just sees everyone else as, like, part of, like, her clan, I guess. That's how she interprets her worship of Aphrodite, I think. There is a lot in her backstory that has really not come up. We've only met her brother.
I think it would be really interesting. We've seen so much of Sasha's backstory and Hammond's backstory because we've been around so long.
Yeah.
But we've had, you know, we know that both Azu and Grizzop have past traumas and past relationships. And it would be wonderful to get a chance to explore some of that.
I've literally asked.
As, like, just an aside, like, a metacast we should do at the end of season 4 should, like, it should be a Q&A of, like, what do you want to know about our characters?
All the secrets that we didn't get a chance to reveal in play.
Like, she has four major characters in her backstory. One of them is Aaron Fairhands, one of them is her brother, and there's two... No! No!
There's more.
There's two mystery ones, and then one who could or could not be around.
Ooh.
How intriguing.
What a mystery of mysteries.
I mean, there's still
there
one.
There could be a mystery.
There's still...
Is there a mystery? We don't know. That's a mystery.
There's still one character I specifically wrote into Hamid's backstory that hasn't turned up yet and could, and that could be quite.
They were behind it all.
Hamid 2. An experiment went wrong. An evil Hamid was
giving
born.
The biggest side eye to Alex, because I bet he hasn't forgotten.
No, I don't think Alex forgets anything.
I don't think he's capable of forgetting.
No, I think it'll just get filed away. In terms of going forward, I'm really interested to see. So the reason I said that she's really well-adjusted is that I want to see how she actually copes with her entire world suddenly changing like this.
Oh, God, season 4 is going to be crazy.
It's going to be just ridiculous, because she's had difficult choices to make before. She has never had something of this magnitude happen.
I'm sure Azu will be fine doing triage for the entire world. I'm sure that will
happen. Well, also, it's
no
the guilt about losing Sasha and Grizzop, and that's going to hit both of them hard. And
I mean, especially because it was Azu's fault.
Well, I think... I think Hamid will almost cope with it better because he's been through so much already.
Plus, it's Azu's fault, not his.
I mean, he wasn't next to either of them in the circle. Maybe that will help.
The thing is,
I mean, Hamid got rescued by his little brother.
How are you managing to be the worst, even in a metacast?
It takes
years. I can't respect your craft here. You're applying no craft to a metacast.
There's craft. It's deep magic.
The thing is, and it's not just the loss of Grizzop and Sasha, it's Azu was one of the ones who's really pushing to go to Rome.
Yep.
Yeah.
So she's like. Yeah, but she's going to feel it. Yeah. Really, really deeply.
It's another thing that Sasha predicted. Like, she predicted that in the opera house, she was like, if the show goes, do you want the show to go ahead or do you want your sister to die? She was like, if we go to Rome, like, I'm just going to get killed and it's going to be your fault. I'm pretty sure she even said that. I'm pretty sure she almost said those exact words.
Can you just stop giving Alex ideas?
I'm going to get killed and I'm going to be so annoyed at you guys.
Like, clearly, Zolf needs to not talk to Mr. Sealing in exactly the same way you need to not talk to Alex.
The thing is, what would be quite sweet is if she actually has quite a happy ending, just one that you guys don't know about, but you're all grieving and she's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Just a ghost at your own funeral. Aww. I also don't have to talk to you. This is amazing.
Yeah. I'm even better at sneaking. Didn't think I could be any better.
I'd love it if you do come back from the past, though, and you just turn up behind us in your normal way, where we don't even see you approach.
Yeah. And in fact, then maybe it's like, taken out of the circle.
I was here the whole time. I was just standing at the back.
From the GM side, I am going to shift slightly into a little bit more mechanics things for a little bit, which is, if we're dealing with things that are going to be long-running, I've already talked about, like, you have to put your pivot points and blah, blah, blah. Another one, which I'm not going to dive into hugely, is you need to vary the encounters a lot so different people have chance to shine and you have to stagger them in the same way. There's no point having a Azu's amazing for 6 weeks and everyone's terrible, then Hamid's amazing for 6 weeks and everyone's... You have to sort of stagger them as much as you can. I'd have varied encounters more than I have, but it would make the combat run long, like 3-4 sessions in a row, and I don't want to do that. So that's the other negative, is normally if I was running this, you'd have a lot more complicated encounters.
If it was just an RPG game, we'd have afternoons which were nothing but combat. But we don't want to make four straight episodes that are nothing but combat.
And you would have far more complicated ones, whereas normally what I'll tend to do is introduce the new mechanic or the new toy of the day. You'll all interact with it, and then we move on. But in the longer term play, the other thing that's worth bearing in mind and will affect character as well in a way that I think some of you might underestimate is at higher levels, characters change quicker and harder, and generally things get a bit more messy because all of the characters can affect more change in the world just straight out of the gate. As a result, the encounters have to match up with them. But what that means is two things. One, things get more lethal. And I don't just mean that, like, oh, you're going to burn through characters, but I do mean quite literally, like, at higher levels, because there's so many toys at play, even if I wanted to pull a punch, which isn't a thing I do, it'd be like, oh, no, what? I forgot this character has 15 attacks. Never mind. But the other thing as well is collateral is another thing to bear in mind is you're reaching the point where you're already sort of becoming the biggest and the best. From here is where you start being basically God striding the landscape, leaving consequences in your wake.
You see, you say that, but we're only level 8, and it has felt like, for example, you know, the heads of the university are probably level 15 or 16.
So,
that's still quite a massive
gulf. So the reasons
golf.
For this is, I've actually tried to front load a lot of this as much as possible so that at really low levels you turn the internet off.
Yeah.
Like, normally that would not happen in the campaign. At those levels it's mostly like, thank you for fetching those carrots. I greatly appreciate it. And I've deliberately, to make it more listenable, never mind anything else, front loaded that. But also, in general, the thing that hasn't come up much is stuff like any single one of you could basically single-handedly take down a town in different ways. Like, there are things to bear in mind in that, and I think it starts to affect character
Cleave
more as
just
well.
Keeps going.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of does.
Like, oh,
well, we saw Azu wading through a crowd once, and Fireball obviously is quite powerful against a crowd too. I mean, I've had to pick a level 4 spell when we're leveling up to level 8, and I'm like, oh my god.
There's proper spells in there.
I mean, it's been a tough choice.
I've not looked at mine yet. I'm really excited to see, like, just how much more I can cut people's heads off.
I didn't want to just buy more stuff that did damage, so I'm thinking about other things. But
in general, one of the things at high level play that can also be an issue is things can get away from you as a GM a lot more. So one of the things is at low levels, it's dead easy to keep track of, like, mechanics. It's just, right, if Sasha is seen, she dies. If Hamid sneezes, he dies. if Zolf basically does anything, he will be slow. And if Bertie is left in a room with any NPC, it will all go wrong. Like, yeah. But at the higher levels that you get, there are more and more complicating factors that you have to keep factoring in. Mm. And it doesn't just carry a sort of cognitive load in sort of setting encounters. So it's stuff like, I now have to bear in mind, like, okay, if this messes with Sasha's acrobatics, but also I can't clump characters together because Hamid will kill them all, but I can't surround the party because then Azu will get them all. But if they're all far away, Grizzop will get them. Mm. And you have to keep building new and interesting ways of doing that.
In terms of combat, we've built quite a powerful party that can cope with a lot of different situations.
For your level, and because of the things that I've allowed and disallowed and so on, you're grossly overpowered for your level.
I don't know if that's true. We haven't min-maxed as badly as it's possible to do so in a game of this sort.
I don't know how to tell you this, Bryn. It's eat what you want, not eat what you can. But part of that as well is just that it's going to be the same at your end as well as players. You're going to have to start keeping track of more things, and more things are going to fall through the cracks. And also, things get more lethal because it will just reach the point of I build an encounter that relies on you remembering that new thing that you leveled up on, and you don't. And then it takes out one of you, and it'll take out the next one. So,
and that's the thing, is if you take out one character, it's so much easier for that to snowball into everyone dying.
Yeah. Right,
and that's what nearly happened in Rome.
Yeah.
Like, Sasha was unconscious.
I die all the time.
If I had failed my reflex save, Hamid is dead. And then it's suddenly Azu against one...
Unarmored Azu
against one super powerful enemy.
Ran out in my pants, basically.
Like, so it's one of those things where at the lower levels, everyone thinks TPK is more common because everyone's squishy. And it's like, well, yeah, but all of your enemies are also squishy. Here, at these high levels, you get those real hard pivot points where a single die roll can go wrong. And you're going to start encountering people who can do things like disintegrate.
Ooh.
And things like that. Like,
no, thank you.
When stuff like that starts.
Reintegrate!
It's fine. He'll get disintegrated on a windy day.
No!
But no, in all seriousness.
Snap.
Disintegrate.
I just realised that would have been so much less dramatic if there hadn't been a decent breeze. Like, people would have just snapped. As long as they kind of blew away, but thank goodness there was a breeze to make it cinematic.
But it's because those of them are moving though, so like.
But also, that's a good example of late game play.
Like,
it just is. Like, you hit the higher levels and some really weird stuff starts happening.
That was actually just wish gone wrong.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much, that's exactly what a wish gone wrong looks like. Oh. And that's on the table.
That's still a lot of levels above us. This is a 1 to 20 system, Alex, and we're at level 8.
And let's be clear. I'm going to tell this now, and some people will be sad. I am not just going to keep running this till you all hit level 20 and go, congratulations, you're all gods. I'm not going to do that. And don't get me started on epic levels, where you go to 30 and
Hamid
stuff. Like,
will be like god power long before level 20. Like, I think
level 15 is what I was always estimating as god level.
But the thing is just your presence in the world will warp things around you as you hit the higher levels, because it's stuff like if you hit like a party of, let's say, 15-16, realistically, because of the way things level up, I'm having to look at a CR20 encounter. You know what a CR20 encounter is? That's things like a Tarrasque. What is this? It's roughly the size of Manchester. What's it immune to? Everything. If you have to start plonking stuff like that in your world,
acrobat over it and stab it in the back.
But my point is when you start having to introduce things like that, you when I'm talking about warping the world, I'm not just saying things like, I declare myself king. It's things like, you got to keep generating those social and those physical encounters. And when you do, you're having to spend and stretch your world more and more. I've used a few tricks to get around it. Like, it's not going to come into play, so I'm happy to discuss it now. Mm. I always had some late game content for you. Like, if it was a DLC, you'd all go to Russia and Siberia.
Yeah.
Because there's all loads of high level stuff over there that also just so happens to not be required to wander through the middle of Prague and completely, like, break the game world. But you do have to think about these things and lay the groundwork.
When you say that, does that mean it can't happen now?
I mean, maybe in a side quest, but I don't think there's
Hashtag
a version.
Red Sun.
Yeah, see, Bryn's seeing it. But yeah, in all seriousness, there are chunks of this world that I built that I don't think are ever going to come up. And part of that is because I didn't know how long things were going to run and things like that. But you've got to bake that in at the start, because if you don't, it is stuff like, if you just started with, oh, there's a world and so on, eventually you are like, a Hydra's turned up. Wow, that feels like the kind of thing people would have noticed before now. Apparently not. Now there's a Hydra. Deal with it. Also, oh no, it can kill 50,000 people around. And oh no, this is terrible. Like, if you don't start laying that groundwork, things can get away with you real quickly. And I'm terrified as to what the high level stuff is going to do.
I'm still hoping to hit level 9 and or 10 before the campaign comes to an end.
That'll happen easily, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we never know.
Whether you survive till 9 or 10, I can't promise.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, dying is a constant risk that I'm terrified of. As I said.
The important thing is that if a TPK happens now, there will always be Chelvar. Alone in the world, and I'll just make it the Ben show, I guess.
I don't know if I'm scared of Azu dying.
Go on.
Like, I think I would be sad, but I don't think I'm, like, so attached to her as you have been. But then I've only been playing her, like, less than half as long as you have, but I do definitely love her.
Like, I think I would have been really upset to see Sasha die. She had a lot of emotional growth to do, and I think she still does, but the thing is, I can't see a lot of the emotional growth that she has to do happening in a fast-paced play environment. Yeah. If she had a big forgiving moment, which, like I say, she did, she hasn't had, like, a moment to step back and even talk through it.
Self-evaluate.
Which, like, it would be really nice to have, but that isn't the sort of... Unfortunately, like, a lot of the time, in the real world, you don't get the time that you want to deal with these things. And in terms of, in this one, like, she doesn't have, like, necessarily the time and space to do that. But that's not why I throw her into dangerous things. She's been doing that from the beginning because she's a show-off, firstly. Not in a charismatic way, but in a, like, oh, I'm the competent one and it really matters to me that I'm competent. Mm. So I'm going to go off and I'm going to fix this all. Ugh. And literally, and getting herself into ridiculous danger, like in Q. That was... stupid. I mean, it saved things, but, like, it was a stupid thing to do, to wander off on her own. And, like, she keeps doing that, like with the invisible thing. Again, just like, I'll do it. I don't need anyone. Ugh. Like, even though she now accepts she can have friends, she still hasn't quite clicked, like,
I can ask the friend.
Yeah. Right? They're not the same thing.
Right? Like, she should be kind of adjusting me and, like, I should do this with my buddies. But, like, she's still struggling with that.
Live together, die alone.
What? Oh! I think, and now finally, that whole thing of, like, the trap where she's angry at Grisop sort of makes her just like, I'm going to do this on my own. And it's like, no, we're going to save you. We're going to set this up all safe. And she's like, I don't get it. I don't understand. Whether it happens in, like, big explosion death thing right now, whether she wanders off into the sunset, whether she dies in a long time, whether we get to the end of the campaign and we do a, like, flash forward and it's 30 years in the future and she's all, like, I don't know, she's adopted a panda cub.
Aww.
Like,
and taught it to stab.
Yeah, but that's so clumsy claws.
Like, it's a long-term project. We were just discussing when she's got the time to do these things.
Like, wherever that happens, I will miss her. Right, because she's definitely like my silly, stabby, slightly more emotionally raw buddy. Right,
like I love all the characters. Like, I will miss if any of them die or leave.
I miss Zulf.
Same.
Like, I genuinely miss Zulf. Like,
I don't miss Bertie.
No,
he wasn't a friend.
Yeah,
but I do.
But Hamid is mine, and that's why I have that extra attachment.
And with Bertie, I think about the things he did, like I think about some disagreeable acquaintances from my past where it's like, oh my gosh, can you remember that? Like, the weird thing is, like, we all live inside our heads all the time, right? So these characters in a way are just as real to us as, like, I've spent
more time with these fictional people than most people I've ever met.
Yeah, right? Like, definitely. I've spent more time with these people than a lot of my close friends.
Yeah.
Which leads then to the last consideration, which is just something to bear in mind, both on the GMing side and the player side, is I'm not hiding this fact. We are entered to the end game now. And that title is... the fact that that is coming up at the same time is just wonderful for me. But in real terms...
Of course, that, Doctor Strange.
But that is what is we're into now. We are into... like,
season 4 is going to be the last season.
Season 4 is the last season. There is no season 5. There is not. There just isn't going to be. How long season four is, that's up for grabs. But there will not be a season.
100 episodes. 50
million episodes.
they've got longer each time.
But the
that's
thing,
true.
The
thing, significant not margins.
Not quite.
I thought it went like 20, 30, 40.
No, it's 17, 36, 32, 41-ish.
Wow. But the thing is let's play something out.
It could easily be another 50. Imagine if he managed to time it to end exactly 200, just like the Magnus Archives is exactly 200. Do you think he's that skillful?
I wouldn't put it
past him. Do you
think
his craft
him.
Is that good?
I'd love to.
Good, good isn't the right word.
That's a real tall order. Yeah, that's a real tall
good
order.
Good is a diamond axe with a perfectly honed thing. Is that good? No, it's a neutral instrument. Is this dagger that you've
too
seen
neutral.
Before? Yeah.
But
Alex is poo neutral.
I am chaotic poo. I'll have, no, that's not true. I'm lawful poo. I'm lawful poo. But
poo, where I'm supposed to poo, the time I'm supposed to poo.
That's a joke from the episode we recorded just before this one, which may or may not have aired yet, so we'll see.
I don't know. Possibly not. We might reverse the order.
Well,
but
it was
anyway,
funny to me.
Jumping yeah, back to the biggest danger here now is, let's say Hamid dies. Okay. A dodge roll happens. He gets that natural one. He gets a chance to save himself, gets a natural one, and he fails those death saves because no one else is there to help him because Azu's too guilty and the other two party members are gone.
Azu's too... like Azu's
she's just,
hid
in,
herself
she's
in,
just
a hole.
In a corner. She's like,
if he dies, I really hope it's some sort of heroic sacrifice and not just something went wrong.
But here's the thing.
I hope that we die together.
Aww.
But here's the thing.
Yep.
This is where the game meta game starts mushing into your story world is... I wouldn't then just say, right, Bryn, don't come back. Like, I wouldn't do
that's
that.
It.
But then you've got the whole mess of how do you navigate... We've already covered, you know, how do you introduce new characters, blah, 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 blah. But when you're in the end game, like, everything has sort of been building up to this and you're introducing a new character and things like that is... It's a lot to process,
it's
both
cool.
in character
while we
and
were
out.
Stuck in the dilated time dimension, one of my younger brothers, who is also a sorcerer and essentially identical to me in several ways, has been gradually growing up.
Yes,
so
yes, they
I just get to place it with an identical character.
But my point being, though, is that it makes the big thing to watch out for is it makes character creation harder for two reasons.
Yeah.
It makes it more difficult for you to make something that is... you have to work harder to fit it into the world. You can't just go, oh, and there's this massive thing, because sometimes it can interfere with that. So you've got to work with your GM more. That's fine. And then the other one is you've got to trust the rest of your players to open the doors to you. Like, I would trust all of you to do that easily. Like, if a new character was to drop in tomorrow, we would all collectively find a way to get them in.
Yeah.
You did it with Grizzop, you've done it with
it's
Azu.
It's a bit of metagaming.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Hamid has been aggressively
trusting.
Welcoming and trusting to... three characters, Grizzop, Azu,
and
Ed.
Yeah.
Because Bryn knows that that's the quickest way to keep the story moving
exactly.
in a nice way. Like, and it, you know, it happened when we were in the basement with Ed and Sasha was like, why the hell are you trusting this guy? And I'm like, well, yes, in character, I don't really have a good reason, but it's just out of character.
We
know.
We're going to fluff this
so
one.
So that's
yeah.
why I, that in, and I do that. Like,
yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think there has to be in a role playing game to keep it. A positive, good environment. There has to be that at least a tiny bit of metagaming that helps you keep the story progressing.
And the longer the story runs, the more important that gets, both from the player end and the GM end, is you've got to start... If you want to see this through to the end, you know, life's about compromises and you're going to have to start making more of them, just in other ways as well. And it's the benefit, the one major benefit of long play is you don't reach this point if you haven't got a group that you trust that you've spent years playing with. You can't play for 2 years if you haven't got a group that you could
oh, yeah,
play with
yeah.
out for
yeah.
2 years.
I have so much trust for everyone. Like,
yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the thing, is you can't reach this point, really, if you have a party that isn't gelling.
Yeah.
So it is one of those problems that sort of solves itself.
Yeah.
But you do have to be aware of it, I think.
What's really nice is that I think our fans know that we all get on and trust
yeah.
each other as well. Like,
apart from Ben, I don't know how he got in here.
He just
appeared
breaking
one
in
day.
Every time. Like, we've barricaded the door. He comes in the window.
We just learn to roll with it,
yeah.
mostly.
We're actually, most of the time, we're just throwing dice at him, trying to get him out of the room.
We keep yelling Pathfind, but it just makes him more angry.
Miss Ben. Yeah. I like him.
Well, I think on
he's
that...
He's been gone for all of 45 minutes, and we are sad.
I think on that, I'm probably going to wrap this one up. It's been a nice kind of loose, chatty
it's
one.
Lovely.
It'll be nice to return, though, to 50 to 60 pages of prep. That'll be good for everyone.
Mostly, you got to find yourself a GM who can do both, you know?
Yeah.
Pace a 45-minute session and a 4 to 5 year campaign, you know? Yeah. Find yourself someone that has those skills just lying around.
No, I disagree. The hard bit is finding anyone who can schedule stuff. That's the one takeaway from this entire metacast.
Absolutely.
The reason this is lucky is that what I did is I built an entire company so you'd feel slightly guilty if you missed the session.
The whole reason that I did this is that I kept trying to do long-term role-playing
games. Work, does it?
And everyone's just too busy.
Yep.
And we just had a improv troupe that had to break up. And, because we couldn't do as many evening shows anymore. And I was like, give me an excuse to see my friends again all the time. And you were like, yes, here is an excuse.
Yep.
And also, they will do it because guilt. And I was like, yes, guilt is such a great motivator.
It's the best aspect is the
guilt.
That pressure to turn up every 2 weeks.
And have some fun.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, if you want to do long-term play, set up a podcast and then run it for years.
This is why the market has become flooded. Everyone's already taken this piece.
Literally is.
All the pieces are falling into place suddenly. Of course,
it's all your fault, Alex.
Get yourself an Alex, and then don't let him out.
Plan.
Well, he doesn't let himself out, so there you go.
Right.
And on that note.
Yeah. Yep, I think we will all be returning next week. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what's coming next week. I've lost track because we have so many, achronological.
We could take a week off. It's between seasons.
Yeah.
Just have 1 week where there's no episode.
His face
Give yourself a break, man.
Have a holiday. Alex.
Have a dinner.
I mean,
yeah, eat some food.
I'm mostly thinking we could run some extra content during
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.